Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program, very remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, August 19, 2020. A member of the South Sudan People's Defense Forces kills two people in Juba.
It will be subject to be investigated, and it has already been arrested, and we have a gun, and we are actually investigating the crimes. And he accepted this morning, when we apprehended him, that he has been the one that who killed the two.
And the Anglican Church appoints a priest to take charge of both dioceses.
Once I am in South Sudan, then I will be able to talk on this matter. Whether we have had a discussion with the premier following my appointment or not.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Four people were killed and others injured during an attack on the bodyguards of South Sudan's Vice President James Wani Iga. The attack by an unknown group took place in Yapa Village in Lobono County. Callisto Lado is the press secretary in the office of the Vice President. He spoke with my colleague Charlton Doki about the attack this past hour.
Yeah, it happened this afternoon.
Where did it happen?
It happened in Lobono.
Do we know who attacked them?
In fact, they are attacked by the rebels who are in the area. It is not the first time this kind of thing is happening. Several attacks happened to the bodyguards of the vice president and to the government forces in the area.
Right.
And as the government, we are sure this is done by NAS, by National Salvation Front. Yeah, they are the first suspect, and we are sure they are the ones because these activities have been done there by them, and they have a presence there.
So what exactly happened? Did they come to the home of the vice president?
No, they attacked the convoy on the way when the car was moving from Yapa, there is a village called Yapa, and the car was heading to Karpeto.
Right.
So the car was ambushed, and they actually released bullets to the vehicle, including RPG rockets. And four soldiers died, two wounded, and this is what happened.
That's Callisto Lado, press secretary in the office of the South Sudan Vice President James Wani Iga. He spoke with my colleague Charlton Doki from Juba this past hour. A soldier from the South Sudan People's Defense Forces shot and killed two of his colleagues near Juba International Airport on Wednesday. The Inspector General of South Sudan National Police Service says police officers have apprehended the soldier, identified as Sergeant Mark Madeng Goch. The police chief is calling on residents of Tomping suburb to remain calm as the situation is under control. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
Police Inspector General Majak Akech told reporters in Juba this morning police arrested Sergeant Mark Madeng Goch, a member of the South Sudan People's Defense Force, in connection with today's shootings.
He was actually assigned in Mundre, and he came, given permission from his own units. And the reason that has been allowed to carry a gun in his own house, or maybe he's in the garrison, we don't even know. It will be subject to be investigated, and it has already been arrested, and we have a gun. And we are actually investigating the crimes. And he accepted this morning, when we apprehended him, that he has been the one that who killed the two.
He was wearing a military uniform, and we later confirmed he is a soldier at the rank of a sergeant, called Mark, who came and shot two people dead, who are bodyguards of a general who is the director for officers' affairs at the general headquarters.
General Akech says the suspect fled with his gun and a pistol he took from one of his victims. He says police pursued the suspect, who later surrendered and was taken to police custody, at which time he confessed to the shootings. One police officer who did not want to be identified because he is not authorized to speak on behalf of the police says tensions were high around Juba International Airport as the army general whose bodyguards were shot demanded that police hand over the suspect to the military. Akech says police are working to apprehend criminals, including those involved in recent killings in and around the capital.
The three people, the two victims and the person who committed the crime are all soldiers from one ministry of defense. We'll see if the leadership of the country decided later on to refer this case to GCM. Then we never know. But we as the police, we are responsible to apprehend the criminals and confess the crime that he might have been accused with. And then we can see the referral of the case is not within our hands. It is within the hand of the leadership of the country to see whether the Minister of Interior or the Minister of Defense, or maybe they were referred to GCM, or maybe the excellent the president of the country, they will be the one to see. But for us, is to make sure that the accused is already been apprehended and it is within our custody.
Police say in the past 1 month alone, at least 7 people, including members of the police force and 3 siblings, were killed in Juba under unclear circumstances. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The Episcopal Church of South Sudan has appointed Reverend John Panchol as the Bishop's Commissar for Bor Diocese, replacing Right Reverend Ruben Akordit, who rebelled from the Episcopal Church of South Sudan last week. In a letter seen by this program, the Anglican Church dismissed Bishop Akordit last week after accusing him of, quote, disobedience and dividing Christians, end of quote. Another bishop from Malek Diocese in Jonglei State says appointing a new bishop amounts to adding fuel to the dispute in the Anglican Church. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
In the latest order issued on Monday, Episcopal Primate Justin Badi Arama appointed Reverend John Panchol Kon as the new Bishop Commissary for Bor Diocese to replace High Bishop Ruben Akudit. Upon hearing about his replacement, Akudit immediately said he was dismissing Reverend Kon from the diocese, saying he is too weak to lead a congregation, let alone an entire diocese.
John Panchol Kon is a person that who cannot manage a congregation, even a parish. He has been having problems since he was the archdeacon in the diocese of Bor until he left without permission. The coming of Panchol Kon is somebody who is coming to confuse people, and as a result, I dismiss him from the diocese of Bor. He is no longer the first time the diocese of Bor.
Reached by phone from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, Reverend Panchol refused to say whether he would accept the appointment in the troubled Jonglei diocese. Speaking in Dinka, Panchol says he will first come to South Sudan before commenting on the highly controversial matter.
Once I am in South Sudan, then I will be able to talk on this matter. Whether we have had a discussion with the primate following my appointment or not, I will not say it now while I am still here.
A bishop commissary is a person who prefers the ground for an election of a new high bishop. In a normal situation, according to High Bishop Akudit, his replacement would be appointed by the congregation, not the primate.
He's not the bishop of the diocese of Bor. He's not the internal high bishop. How can he come and just appoint somebody he does not even know? He does not even know John Panchol Kon. So he has been misled by the people who are misleading him.
Asked what will happen if the newly appointed bishop commissary comes to Bor to take up his new assignment, Akudit said, let him try. The row between High Bishop Akudit and Primate Badi began late last year when Akudit created 3 more dioceses in the Jonglei internal province and consecrated 3 bishops without prior approval from Badi, who also served as the High Bishop of the Metropolitan Diocese of Juba. Some bishops and Christian faithful within the Jonglei Episcopal Church say the appointment of Reverend Panchol as Bishop Commissary caught them by surprise. Peter Jomayom, bishop for the Malek Diocese, is one of them.
I don't know whether he has been buying for position, but he was one of the strongest supporters of Archbishop Ruben. I know him as a priest in the diocese of Bor, so that's what I know. But whether he has been contesting in any positions, I'm not aware.
Reverend Joe says the appointment of Panchol only causes more confusion within the Anglican Church and the Jonglei internal province in particular. This is not the first time the church has witnessed a power struggle. Similar chaos has occurred in South Sudan with the other denominations in recent years. Reverend John Kong says that is because church leaders are becoming more like politicians than spiritual leaders.
You want to be a bishop, so you should have to buy your congregation. The Muslim congregation that have not support you, and then you will not work with them. At the congregation, those support you, you will work with them. And you will fire those who are in the position already, and appoint those who are out, and those who are coming behind you to follow you. And this is the political crisis now in Christianity that we face with the Southern Sudanese in different denominations.
Reverend Kong and other priests and pastors in the country are calling for a peaceful end to the current chaos within the Episcopal Church of South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
Sudan's acting foreign minister has denied any knowledge of talks between Sudan and Israel aimed at normalizing relations between the two countries. Sudan's foreign ministry spokesperson told the media in Khartoum early this week that Sudan was due to sign an agreement with Israel. The Sudanese acting foreign minister says his government has no knowledge of such agreement. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Speaking in Arabic, Haider Badawi told Sky News Arabia on Tuesday that Sudan was hoping to reach an agreement with Israel and to build a relationship with a country which suits Khartoum's interests. Badawi also told Sky News that he thought normalizing relations with Israel would help the entire region.
We shall be able to build an exemplary peace deal for all our neighboring countries here in the region, so that they're able to follow our footsteps and do the same with Israel. I would like to note here that even Palestinians have had a long history of diplomatic ties with Israel, so why should it be right for them to do and wrong for us?
Badawi said, communication is ongoing between Sudanese and Israeli officials, which is aimed at normalizing ties between the two countries, and insisted his statement should be taken as official.
As a civil servant and responsible diplomat in the foreign ministry, I pursue the interests of my own country. I did not come with this statement from nowhere. I made it based on the ongoing political developments in the country.
Less than 24 hours after making that statement, Badawi was fired. In a statement released on Tuesday, Acting Foreign Minister Gamaruddin said the government was surprised by Badawi's claim that Sudan and Israel were moving toward reconciliation, adding that the matter had not been discussed in the foreign ministry at all. Gamaruddin said, quote, "No one tasked Badawi with making statements on this matter," end quote. The government-run Sudan News Agency released a statement today confirming Gamaruddin fired Badawi without providing any reason for the decision. Some Sudanese political parties reacted to the Badawi's statement before he was fired. The National Umma Party, a member of the transitional government, said the government has no constitutional rights to seek any new foreign relations. It said resolving contentious national issues is not the focus of the government right now. On Monday, Sudanese protesters returned to the streets to demand more reforms a year after power-sharing deal between the pro-democracy movement and the military. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, who is behind the coup d'etat in the West African state of Mali? That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. Question today.
If you could swap lives for a day, who would you swap with and why?
I'll swap with our finance minister because I think he's doing a yeoman job and I want to have a feel of what he goes through in a day.
I'll change with my dad because I love him so much. He has been there for us. I mean, like, he has taken us in good schools. He has taken care of us because first our mom is not working. We depend on our dad.
If I was to swap with someone, I feel I admire myself more than anyone in this life, and I feel I'm capable of doing what those people are doing, so I would not swap for any person.
I would like to change position with the president because I feel it would be nice to give instruction to everyone.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the coronavirus pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and noses when we are in crowded areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Tuesday's military mutiny in Mali started in the same army base as the 2012 coup d'etat and comes after weeks of protests calling on President Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta to step down. Crony Dufka Saleh, director for Human Rights Watch, has been researching Mali's military actions in the crisis torn north for years. She spoke to Ricky Shryok about current military grievances and context of yesterday's mutiny.
Yeah, well, it's early days, so it's difficult to know what's at the origin of this particular incident. But what is clear is over the past several years, Mali has really lurched from crisis to crisis. You know, first when the northern part of the country fell to Tuareg separatists and Islamists, and then a coup in the south, and then instability spreading into the center, which has been characterized by mass atrocity, and then demonstrations, which in many ways paralyzed the capital. So this is the latest in a series of incidents which suggests that there are deep problems within the Malian government.
But what's kind of the military sense of loyalty to Keïta, especially given the tension that he's facing from the public already?
There's been a tremendous amount of effort by the Malians and also by the international community to professionalize the Malian army. And while there have been way too many allegations of abuse and not enough progress at ensuring investigations and accountability for allegations of abuse by them, there has been effort to reform the military, the Ministry of Defense, and there had been some progress along those lines. That said, there were persistent allegations of some governance problems within the military. The Malian military has suffered really significant losses of personnel as young soldiers have died in the scores in brash, organized and lethal attacks by the armed Islamists against the Malian military. And that has upset, obviously, the families, Malians in general, but also certain people within the military who have suggested that, resupply, training and discipline, was a problem.
You mentioned the history of Kati. I mean, the 2012 coup happened there, and is it worrisome because Mali is in a much worse state now security-wise than it was in 2012?
Mali's security challenges have increased exponentially since the 2012 coup, as armed Islamists have spread from the north into central and even elsewhere in Mali. That insecurity has led to significant communal tension and violence by opposing ethnic militias, and in which hundreds of civilians have been killed. There are ambushes and IEDs and attacks on villages that happen on a regular basis, and large swaths of the country are really insecure. So the situation is indeed more precarious now than it was even back in 2012.
That was Crony Dufka Saleh, director at the Human Rights Watch. She was speaking with Ricky Chirk from Washington. Dozens of women in Cameroon's English-speaking southwest are protesting today against recent violence by suspected rebels. Women in the town of Boya say they are increasingly victims of the region's four-year separatist conflict. For VOA News, Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
We surrender!
About 70 women, all wearing dark dresses, sing as they march through the streets of the southwestern town of Boya on Tuesday. In the songs, they say they are tired of burying their children, husbands, and recently their sisters. The Cameroon Women's Peace Movement organized the peaceful protest. Its spokesperson, Agbo Magdalene, says they were outraged by the recent slaughter of a 32-year-old woman in the southwestern town of Moyoka on August 11.
The women of the southwest expressed unreserved indignation at this murder, which is one too many in the long list of senseless killings perpetrated by suspected separatist fighters. We call on the government to track down the killers of Timassam Comfort Aferi while inviting the population to give full collaboration to the security forces in their investigations.
Comfort, a mother of two, was gruesomely murdered in Moyuka, and a video of her beheading went viral on social media, provoking widespread condemnation. The government of Cameroon, rights groups, the United Nations and embassies in Yaoundé blamed separatists and asked for investigations to be carried out and Comfort killers punished. Cameroon said it was the 11th case of attacks reported on women and social workers in August. 43-year-old Precious Mbuel says she joined the women in the peaceful protest because she also lost her aunt in the northwestern town of Bamenda.
I asked myself, what is really going on? Why are women being the target? I cried and I decided to come out to say enough is enough. Women should not be the target. Our hearts are bleeding. They are killing our children, killing our husbands, killing even us, the women, who gave birth to all of them.
Bowell said she wants all killers of women and children to be brought to justice. Bernard Okalia-Bilai, governor of Cameroon's southwest region, where Boya is found, says he is delighted that women are increasingly rising up to denounce violence in spite of threats from separatists. He says the women should help the military to conquer the separatists by denouncing all fighters in their localities.
I want you to go back to your various villages and quarter. Tell the other women to go out and call those whose sons are killing your children. Call them to stop it.
Bilai said women should consider the military as their partners and should not believe in what he called propaganda by separatists that the troops commit atrocities. The women said they will continue their protest in other English-speaking towns, but did not say when. The 4-year separatist crisis in Cameroon's English-speaking northwest and southwest regions began with lawyers and teachers' protests over overbearing use of the French language in the minority English-speaking country. The military responded with a crackdown, and separatists took weapons, saying that they were protecting their communities from military brutality. Over 3,000 people have been killed and 500,000 displaced, according to the United Nations. 50,000 others escaped to neighboring Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
And here in the United States, Democrats formally nominated former Vice President Joe Biden as their candidate for president on Tuesday during the second night of an extraordinary virtual convention that included criticism of President Donald Trump from Republicans as well as Democrats, and personal stories of Biden as a public servant, father, and husband. White House correspondent Patsy Wadikwaswara has this report from Wilmington, Delaware.
Capping the second night of the Democratic National Convention, the woman who could be the next First Lady, Jill Biden, highlighted the pandemic's impact on children and families and spoke of her husband from a high school classroom where she used to teach in the Biden's hometown of Wilmington, Delaware.
How do you make a broken family whole? The same way you make a nation whole. with love and understanding, and with small acts of kindness.
Just as on the first night, Republicans lined up to support Biden, including a testimony from Cindy McCain, wife of the late Senator John McCain, and Colin Powell, the retired four-star general and Secretary of State under President George W. Bush, who said Joe Biden would make a responsible commander-in-chief.
For Joe Biden, that doesn't need teaching. It comes from the experience he shares with millions of military families, sending his beloved son off to war and praying to God he would come home safe.
Their presence highlights the white tent message of unity that Democrats want to convey, targeting moderate Republicans and independents. But ideology is not the only divide the Democrats are seeking to bridge. On Tuesday, they focused on another divide, the generation gap, with members of the old guard sharing the spotlight with young rising stars.
You know what Donald Trump will do with four more years? Blame, bully, and belittle. And you know what Joe Biden will do? Build back better.
We stand with Joe Biden because this isn't just about defeating Donald Trump. We are in this to win for America.
Everything is done virtually, including the traditional roll call, where delegates cast their votes based on the result of each state's primary or caucus. Vanessa Beasley teaches presidential rhetoric at Vanderbilt University.
We're going to look back on this and call it the Zoom convention, because I think some of the moments that might have seemed awkward or might have seemed like the picture was a little grainy, I think that's part of many of our lived experience now. And more to the point, is in fact how we are having relationships in some cases with coworkers, family members, people that we care about.
On Wednesday night, the Democratic National Convention will continue with California Senator Kamala Harris delivering her acceptance speech as the vice presidential nominee, making history as the first black woman and South Asian American on a national U.S. political ticket. From Wilmington, Delaware, Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with Panchol Deng with the song Panda. We've been listening to Pancho Deng with the song Panda. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for making us part of your evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers, because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.